But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such there is no law. This is fruit that is never out of season. It's always in season. We call them the fruit of the Spirit. There's been a lot of discussion about the purpose of the Spirit's presence in the heart and life of the Christian, but I believe this is one of the primary purposes of the indwelling Spirit, to help produce this fruit in our lives. As opposed to the works of the flesh, which characterize people living to satisfy their own lust that we read about in the previous verses, 19 through 21 of Galatians 5. This identifies the fruit of the Spirit, which is born in the lives of people who live to the glory of God. The word fruit is singular here, rather than the expected plural form. And this likely means that these qualities are a unity. And perhaps a cluster of grapes gives us a better idea of the fruit of the Spirit. They're all to be born in the life of the Christian. And I'd like for us to take a closer look at this fruit that is never out of season. And it begins with love. And we shouldn't be surprised, should we, that the fruit of the Spirit, the qualities of this fruit would begin with love. It's that one quality that binds everything else together in perfect unity. Colossians 3:14 says, "But above all these things," and Paul has just listed several things similar to what we find here in Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But he says, "Above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection." Put on love, which binds them all these other qualities together in perfect unity. So consider this aspect of the fruit of the Spirit. Love. Love. First of all, let's clear up some misconceptions about love. Some say love is only a feeling, an emotion, a knot in your stomach, a certain kind of physical feeling that you have, and many are searching for that feeling to know whether or not they have love. And because many think that that's all it is, we talk about falling into love or falling out of love because they've lost that feeling. Well, it's much more than that, isn't it? Love is not a feeling. Love is uncontrollable is another misconception. Someone, when talking about being in love, might say, "I feel giddy, my head's spinning, I'm weak in my knees." If we didn't know better, we'd think those are signs of sickness. But love isn't uncontrollable. Love is more than a feeling and certainly not uncontrollable. If we believe that it is uncontrollable, that's just something that happens to us, and that lends more to the idea that it's something we fall into, something that we cannot change. And that's not what the Bible says about love. But as we seek to understand more about this aspect of the fruit of the Spirit, let's discuss two kinds of love. One we might call natural love. This is a need love. It arises from a need in the one who is loving. It reaches to someone or something that promises to fill a need within us. For example, the Bible speaks of the Greek word phileo love. We call it friendship love. And it's a 50-50 kind of love where each party puts something into it. It's a give and take relationship, give and take love. It gives in the expectation that the loved one will give back. And if not returned, then this love tends to die. This sort of love is not evil, it's natural, it's the most common. But there is a higher degree of love, of which Paul writes in Galatians 5, 22. You see, the danger of this natural, common love is that it can be bent and perverted so easily. Need love, if we don't watch it and monitor it closely can lead us into using people, manipulating them to our ends. But this natural love is to be held in contrast with this uncommon love of which Paul speaks. The highest and divine form of love is what the New Testament calls agape. Agape. It's selfless love. It arises not from a need within ourselves, but from a need in the other. And agape love seeks to meet that need of the other without any interest in ourselves. It's not a give and take relationship. It's a give and get nothing in return type of love. It's not seeking for what one can get out of this expressing of love, but it's totally selfless, seeking the best interest of the other. The perfect model is Jesus himself. He loved freely. He loved unselfishly. He loved for the sake of those who needed love. In fact, he came to save us out of self-emptying love. It was only for our concern for us that Jesus came and that he went to the cross. And only a love as pure as God's is powerful enough to inspire us to exhibit that same kind of selfless love. We need God's help in order to express that kind of love. So let's learn to love God's way. In order to do that, we need to understand what love is, what it really is. Love is a matter of choice. Love is a matter of choice. I want to go back to that Colossians 3 passage, beginning with verse 12. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies or compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another and forgiving one another, if anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so also you must do. But above all these things, put on love. There's a command there. Put on love, which is the bond of perfection. It's not something, love is not something of which we are a victim. It's something that we choose. And Paul is instructing us, put on, clothe yourselves with love, which is the bond of perfection. Paul wouldn't have asked us to put on something that we can't control. So love is a choice. It's a matter of choice. And love is a matter of conduct. Of conduct. Of how we behave. My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue. Let us not love in word or in speech, John is saying, but in deed and in truth, with actions and in truth. It's more than what we say. It's a behavior. And John is telling us to back up our vocal expressions of love with the behavior, the conduct of love. There was a man telling his girlfriend, "Oh, honey, I would die for you." And she said, "Oh, you're always telling me that, but you never do it." Well, I think the point is well taken, that it must be expressed. Saying "I love you" is not enough. It must be backed up by conduct. So love is a matter of choice. It's a matter of conduct, of what we do. And that leads us to this point. To love God's way, we must act like love acts. That would mean that we act lovingly, whether we feel like it or not. You see, actions tremendously impact our feelings. What we do has an impact on the way that we feel. John Maxwell says there are two types of people. Some think that they must feel good before they do something. Others do something before they feel good. John Maxwell also says that when he would do counseling and meet with a couple, a married couple who's having difficulties, that he would say something like this: I want you to go home and give behavior of love to your spouse. Behave lovingly toward your spouse. And he says, I remember the response. They look at me and say, Preacher, how can I go home and act like I'm in love when I don't feel anything? And his response would be, allow your love to mature and allow your actions to determine your feelings. Behave lovingly. Love is a choice. Love is conduct. And so what he's saying is, act the way love acts, and the feelings will follow. Mature people understand that actions determine feelings. Immature people think feelings determine actions. Maxwell would say to them, I want you to go back and act loving to your spouse. Say words of love to your spouse. Do acts of kindness. I want you to allow those actions to pave the way for love and even feeling love. If you think about it, Jesus didn't tell us just to love one another. Look at what he said. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. As I have loved you, there's the major difference, the greater degree of love. You think about the cross and how Jesus expressed his love. And it wasn't that God and Jesus were demonstrating their love for their friends. It wasn't that they were demonstrating love for a bunch of nice people. But they were demonstrating love for sinners, even for the ones who had cried out for his death. And he's instructing us, you love one another as I have loved you. I remember reading the story many years ago, and I've shared it many times, but it's worth sharing again, I think, for this point. There was a young soldier who died in battle because he was trying to save the life of a fellow soldier. And the parents of this soldier who died in battle, of course, were heartbroken. But they learned that the young man whose life was saved by their son was back in the States and in their area. And so they wanted to reach out to this young man and get to know the one for whom their son had given his life. And so they were able to contact him and invited him over to their home. And when that day came and they were so anxious to meet this young man and get to know him, this young man arrived drunk. And it was a painful experience for the deceased man's parents as they tried to be kind to this young man who under the influence was saying things that he shouldn't, and it was just a miserable time. And finally, the young man left their home, and the husband turned to the wife and said, to think that our son had to die for someone like that. But that's exactly for whom Jesus died. It wasn't that the people were so good, but they were sinners in need of a Savior. God demonstrates his own love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Romans 5, verse 8. And in that context, you'll find words like, he died for the ungodly, for the sinners, for even his enemies. And one of the most difficult passages of application, I believe, are found in the Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. It's easy to love some folks. It's easy to love those who love you. But Jesus says, love your enemies. Pray for those who spitefully use you. Now, that's difficult. But love is a choice and it's conduct. And he's not saying feel lovingly about your enemy, but act lovingly toward them. And that's God's way of loving. And we understand perfectly now how we need God's help in order to do that. But we see God doing just that when he gave his son Jesus to die for sinners. So we must cooperate with God's instruction. We must cooperate with the Spirit who desires to produce this fruit in us. We must cooperate. So let me conclude with some very, very practical lessons about love. First one is this: love people now. Love people now. Sometimes we wait too long. And it's not that we don't love that person and even feel that love and warm feelings for them. It's just we don't express it in time at times. So if you love someone, if you care about them, let them know. Love people now. Secondly, love is vulnerable. If when you choose to love a person, you're opening yourself up to that person. And when you open yourself up to a person, you risk some things. You risk being hurt or even betrayed. There's a lot of football on right now. If you'll notice some of these running backs, when the defense tries to tackle them, they'll put a stiff arm out to them to try to resist the tackle. And sometimes people can go through life like that, stiff-arming people to try to keep from opening up and being hurt. Rather than opening up ourselves and allowing others to get close to us. And there is risk. C.S. Lewis said it like this: love anything and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to be sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken, but it will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. The only place outside of heaven where you can be safe from all dangers of love is hell. So love is vulnerable, but it's worth the risks. Thirdly, love is powerful. Love is powerful. Law may tell you what to do, but love will give you the power to do it. Why is it that the greatest, first and foremost commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength? Because if we obey God out of that motive, of our love for Him, our dedication to Him, that gives us, that enables us to be obedient to Him. God knew what love could do. It's a powerful, powerful force. I think about Napoleon's statement. I know men, and I tell you that Jesus Christ is no mere man. Between him and every other person in the world, there is no possible term of comparison. Alexander, Caesar, Charlemagne, and I have founded empires. But On what did we rest the creation of our genius? Upon force, he answers. Jesus Christ founded his empire upon love. And at this hour, millions of men would die for him. Love is powerful. But love God's way, is unconditional. Is unconditional. If love is what it should be, it's unconditional. And we have often found, have we not, that those who need love the most deserve it the least. There was a guy that was getting ready to propose to his girlfriend. He had the ring in his hand, was holding her hand, and the moon, it was just right for this occasion. "Sweetheart," he said, "I want you to marry me." He said, "I don't have a car like Johnny Green, and I don't have a yacht like him, and I don't have a house his size, and I don't have the money of Johnny Green. But I want you to know that I love you with all my heart." And she looked into his eyes and said, "I want you to know that I love you too, sweetheart. But could you tell me a little bit more about Johnny Green?" That's conditional love. But the kind of love that God has is unconditional. Unconditional. And a final lesson. The spirit of love makes all people and events special. It's the spirit of love in any event that makes it special. You remove the spirit of love and you just had an event. But you haven't had something that lingers in a beautiful way. Henry Drummond said, "You will find as you look back upon your life that the moments when you have really lived are the moments when you've done things in the spirit of love." The spirit of love makes all people and events special. We have been given an unmistakable challenge to cooperate with God's spirit, to allow our lives to bear this beautiful fruit to his glory. And one aspect of that fruit is love, agape love. And remember this statement by John Maxwell. The best things in life always have love wrapped around them. Because it was love that prompted God to send his Son. It was our need to which he expressed that agape love, that he would give the best of heaven so that we might be saved. And perhaps tonight it's your desire to accept that salvation on his terms. You're ready to confess your faith and be baptized into Christ so that your sins can be washed away. And that kind of love will draw us back when we've wandered away. It may be that the love of God is pulling you in that direction to come back home as one who's wandered away. If you need to respond tonight to the Lord's invitation, please do so right now as we stand and sing.